Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street, downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joins us. Hello, sir.
Hey, how's it going?
It's Tuesday. The weather's getting better. I've got one shot in my system already, so I'm feeling pretty good about things.
Tequila?
That too, yes.
Yeah. So, hi, everybody. I hope you're all well out there in Radio Land. As the intro song indicated, today we were going to talk about Closure. That, of course, was that's the song no one knows, but that's the band Chevelle. By the way, if you like music of a certain heaviness, I recommend their new album. It's tremendous. So some sad news, though, before I start on Closure. Sad news coming out of the United Kingdom. This has nothing to do with the royal interview. though I guess that's some sad news that we all kind of anticipated. No, Stephen Spurrier, who I've mentioned many times in the program, has passed away at age 79. For those of you who don't know who I'm talking about, he is not the football coach. He, to the best of my knowledge, is still alive and tan, living in the southeast part of America. No, Stephen Spurrier was the British gentleman who moved to Paris, opened up a wine store in the just off what is Paris's Wall Street, essentially, and opened basically a little educational forum above it on the second floor, and perhaps most famously, organized what is known now as the Judgment of Paris in 1976, which was pitting Burgundy whites, which is Chardonnay, and Bordelaise reds, which is, you know, Cab Merlot blends, essentially, against California Cabs and Chardonnays, and it was a blind tasting held in the Hotel de Ville in Paris, and blind, all French judges. And California won, and it is widely held that is essentially what made California's wine reputation. He went on to do other things, including something else we've talked about, which is he was one of the first people to invest in a bubbly estate in the south of his own country in the UK. That has garnered some critical acclaim as well, and of course, have many of his neighbors. That was sort of one of the odd things of climate change, is that all of a sudden the British, who could really only claim to know wine through other people's wines, now have quality wines of their own. But anyway, just a tremendously accomplished. I mean, you know, I could spend an hour talking about his accomplishments, someone who should be recognized, because wine culture in America without California's success would not be what it is, and without his foresight, California would not have succeeded like it did. So just a big ripple effect, butterfly effect. If he hadn't, then we wouldn't. So rest in peace to him, and we'll move on with Closure. But I would be remiss if I didn't note that. So, Cork, which is widely falling out of favor, of course, but is still in demand amongst both winemakers who care, as well as a certain set of people who just can't get their heads around alternative closures. But cork is made of a substance called suberin. Suberin is hydrophobic, which means it basically repels water. So once the cork is in there and it expands, it repels the liquid that sloshes up against it. It's found in the bark of the Quercus suber, the cork oak, most of which, as I think I mentioned last week, are found in Portugal. Fully 50% of the annual production is in the Montado region of Portugal. elsewhere found in the rest of Southwest Europe and Northwest Africa, but Portugal is sort of the name to remember. Elasticity, impermeability, it makes it a great, great stopper for wine, and as I mentioned last week as well, it started in the Iberian Peninsula around the same time that they figured out how to do a high temperature for creation of glass, therefore bottles that wouldn't shatter if you put cork in them. Interesting things to note about cork. Cork trees live about 300 years. They don't start producing until 25 years, and they are harvested every 9 years.
Hmm.
And they're basically viewed as an environmentally friendly industry, which is cool. It's just sort of naturally, if they don't do the right thing, they lose their entire source of income, so they have to be good. Kind of nice when nature sort of forces you into that. So it never sort of faced any scrutiny, really. As I said, they came into general use in the mid to late 1600s. There are natural cracks and fissures in cork that allow some gas flow, oxygen being the obvious wine for still wines, but the compression of a sparkling bottle prevents the escape of the captured CO2, for instance, your champagne, which is in theory where Dom Perignon, Brother Perignon, brought the idea back to champagne. Aging. Does it age? Yes, it helps age things. Do you need cork to age wine? No, you don't, because in every bottle there is what's called the eulage. That is the little gap of space between the fill and the top of the wine bottle. And some estates famously fill to overflow so that that is basically non-existent, and the only oxygen is that which is available basically in suspension in the liquid. The Zillikon estate, for instance, in Germany is famous for doing that. So it's all sort of, you know, you can still age wine without cork, but cork is sort of, you know, it's tradition, and that's important. Why not cork? Well, of course, there's what we call corkage, which is caused by trichloroanisole, TCA, and that exists in about 5 to 10% of all cork that is harvested, and it makes your wine smell like a bilge pump or a library that's been underwater or something unpleasant. And it's a thing. It's just a thing. And, you know, if you have wine that is corked, if you have a good wine merchant, you can, you know, stop up the rest of the wine, bring it back to the wine merchant, and they can get their money back. But that's what it is, and that is why some people opt for things that are not corked. May I ask your staff how much time I have left?
2 minutes. 2 minutes, they all say.
My goodness. You only talk to Carrie. Rich, you're underselling Carrie. Like, the rest of your staff, I'm sure, has things to offer. You know, if you watch or if you listen to, Rich Eisen or any of these guys, you know, they make full use of, every one of them has a mic that they can check, not just one. So,
well, look, the thing is this, and I probably shouldn't say, it's mostly unpaid child labor.
Oh, yeah, well, you don't want them on there. I mean, no. God, they drop F-bombs and everything like that. You can't have that.
Right.
Sensors and stuff. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure I'm running out. It sounds like I'm running out of time. I want to mention the other things. Of course, the screw caps. They're the other thing that, you know, is everywhere. If you're not used to them, folks, get used to them. They are wonderful. They're not TCA proof, but they're obviously much safer. As I mentioned, wine can still age with those. You'll see synthetic corks, other things that are sort of made to make people feel better. They're just as good. They're fine. But basically, the point of this segment is to get people over the fact that cork is kind of on its way out, at least a little bit. Before I run out of time, I wanted to mention that tonight on Destination Downtown Bangor, on the Downtown Bangor Facebook page, we will be talking to the one and only John Dobbs, owner of Patty Murphy's, talking about what they're going to be doing for a COVID-safe St. Patrick's Day, as well as what it's like to live and own a building in downtown. So do check that out. And tomorrow morning for broadcast in May, I will be talking to a member of the Perrin family of France. So lots of cool tasting things on the way for Bangor Wine. Keep your eyes and ears open And I'll talk to you next week. We'll talk about box wine and shipping.
That sounds awesome. Thank you, Eric. We'll be watching tonight, and we'll check in with you right here next Tuesday.
Thank you to all of you at Zone Radio.
All of them, the little children are clapping. That's a message in the bottle with Eric Meehan.